Deutschland. Just over the halfway mark on the Formula One calendar is the Grand Prix of Germany. Germany is a country known for its technical accomplishments, and in F1 for its accomplished technicians. Vettel, the defending World Drivers Champion. Der Onkel Schumacher, six-time champion. There's Glock, Hülkenberg, and Rosberg. Ist hat Deutsch. There is the German team Mercedes-Benz, recently back in the game as a constructor. The Silver Arrows have a proud Grand Prix and Grandstand tradition. And hosting for Germany in its rotation is the historic Hockenheim Ring nearby Baden-Württemberg in the Rhine Valley. The circuit is originally built out of forest roads, but the shortened track used today has been redesigned over the years after racing legend Jim Clark and others lost their lives here. Unfolding for the 2012 race, the Wunderkind Sebastian's Red Bull is being looked at for its legality. Bad timing in front of the home crowd. Will that put a damper on his race even if the sun remains out? McLaren's made improvements to the MP427, hoping it's enough to help Button out of his fog. Und Herr Alonso and his prancing horse keep charging forward and bringing the heat, come rain or shine. Who will be able to see the forest for the trees and find their way to the top step? And who will be taken round to the woodshed after the race? Achtung, stay tuned. Dies ist Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly German Grand Prix Racecast. Auf Wiedersehen, listeners.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 591, July 27th, 2012. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Santander 123 account. We already know who the branch manager is. He is writing his own check these days. What say you, Mr. Rogers?
On today's program, can Fernando be slowed down? Massa says he'll leave Formula One if dropped by Ferrari. Grosjean has the speed, but does he have the brain? And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi himself, and special interview with Axel Jeffries, and this weekend's special interview, podcast number 592 with Jack Hawksworth. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. And we just found a new drink here, the official drink of F1 Weekly for today, Gatorade. Lime and cucumber. Very tasty. Highly recommended by the Bradford Exchange. But I do have a question. I know you want to get into the nitty-gritty details of Collie and race recap. The question I have, because I've been watching the whole season so far, does Fernando Alonso have a teammate?
Yes, but he's often absent.
Yes.
He's bowling sometimes on the same weekend.
Yeah, the German Grand Prix was another case of Felipe massacred. It's pretty sad.
It is pretty sad, and like I said in the intro, Massa now saying that he will not be in Formula One if he's not picked up by a top team next year. In other words, I think he's been texting Rubinho.
I concur.
Yes. He sees Rubinho happy living in Miami, giggling with the other Brazilians and a couple of Colombian percolators. And he says, hey, no pressure over there. This could be the life for me.
And you know, I was talking to this young Finnish driver who's also living in Florida, Petri Sawanto. So I asked him, you know, what have you enjoyed of the American culture so far? And one of the first things he said was, I really like the redneck burger. So I think Massa will enjoy a bite too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he'd enjoy it for sure. Anyway, let's talk about qualifying at the German Grand Prix. Interesting a little weather once again, like Silverstone. It was fun, but in the end, El Machismo comes through. You have to admit, the excitement was in the air.
Well, you know, all I can tell you is the win in Malaysia was incredible. The second was even more than that. This pole and this victory, this guy is now performing like Michael Schumacher in his prime and like the man with the yellow helmet in his prime. I mean, performance is now reached beyond words.
It's true. It's true. We had all sorts of different weather conditions during qualifying, and it looked pretty dodgy at best. The beginning, Q1 started out dry, but then in the end, the rain came. Out in the first quali was our usual suspects, and Michael Schumacher just barely makes it out. It's sort of bizarre how some of these people perform well, and sometimes they don't perform. People were having problems getting heat in the tires, but in the end, a very, very exciting qualifying with Nando taking pole position. And I didn't expect it. I thought for sure some of these Rainmeisters might take it. At least somebody German. We're in Germany. Five Germans on the grid. Quite shocking. And once again, the Germans just can't bring it to the fatherland.
Well, you know, I tell you, pole position was very impressive, very good and exciting qualifying. And like I said, you know, the way this thing is, the tide is turning towards Nando in a car that's not has been the very best. So one has to wonder how it will be if they can put it to the performance level of Red Bull last year.
That's very, very true. Now, of course, we had some grid penalties to talk about. Romain Grosjean, Mark Webber, and Nico Rosberg, all with gearbox penalties and changes. So they all had to drop back five places, which meant that Mark Webber had to start, I believe, eighth. But Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel on the front row, very exciting. Michael Schumacher third, and Nico Hülkenberg, what a showing for Force India in fourth place.
That was very impressive, and I'm going to tell you, you know, I've mentioned this a few times, and unfortunately, Nico, since that day, as far as Formula One is concerned, is right now not where I expected him in terms of performance. But many years ago, he was racing in A1GP, and there was a performance in the rain in Sepang where it was like it's dry for him and very wet for, and you know, it rains a lot. It rains buckets in KL when it rains. So I was very happy to see him. I'm a firm believer in his faith, just like I was always the case with Romain Grosjean. But today I was reading that he is saying he's not sure if he will hang on to his seat because somebody can bring him, you know, bags of money and get him out. But he's making a good name for himself.
I agree. No, he is. And that fourth place start on the second row was just a beautiful thing for Force India. I certainly admit. Pastor Maldonado once again out qualifying Bruno Senna. P5. You know, you could say what you want about Pastor, reckless or not. He's quick.
No, he is reckless, but he's also very quick. So, but the quali was impressive, and I think this guy does a pretty good job in the rain and in street circuits, so good for him.
A little disappointing for Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton. They just couldn't put it together. You would think Lewis Hamilton, with the kind of conditions we've had, that he could put it on pole. But lately, it just hasn't been happening, even though we know the McLaren is quick. Interesting qualifying, but bravo, 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 bravo. And I sort of wish sometimes that Flavio was there to give him those hugs and those kisses.
Yeah. You know, as far as qualifying is concerned, you know, the HRT getting out in Q1 and Marussia getting out, that's expected. It's no big surprise. But I'm, again, you know, Formula One is one of those things. You know, you get in there, they and people like us, race fans, they want performance right now. One guy who was kind of not living, I will not say he's disappointing me, but not living up to expectation is Jean-Éric Vergne, your homeboy.
I totally agree. And Toro Rosso. Toro Rosso had some really good moments last year with Alguersuari and
Buemi.
But this year, you know, I'm not sure if you could blame the car. Now, occasionally, Daniel Ricciardo does show some good pace during the race. Sometimes, very often, top 10. But Jean-Eric Vergne, yeah, he's disappointed me, especially when we had the postseason testing last year, I believe, which was in Abu Dhabi, where Jean-Eric Vergne looked really great in last year's RB, and this year is just not panning out.
Well, it could be the car. You know, the technical guy now has left Giorgio Ascanali, or Ascanelli, whatever the name is. So we'll see how that will affect. But, you know, still, I would expect a wee bit better performance from Jev. And but doesn't mean that he has hit the delete button and the talents are out the door now.
I agree. And I'm glad we're not hearing complaints from Vergne about it's the car, it just doesn't suit my style, a la Sebastian Bourdais.
Well, let me just tell you, the complaint you don't want to hear is from Dr. Marco.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one complaint, and then comes the machete.
Ooh, I like that. Anyway, let's go to the start of the German Grand Prix. Beautiful sunny day. Nasser, you're waving your arms.
Yeah, just an aborted start. The pole position at Hockenheim Ring was 207 for Scuderia Ferrari since 1950, so that's pretty impressive for
those
Ferrari.
Are good statistics.
Si, senor.
Which number for Fernando Alonso? You don't know? I mean, you're the statistician all of a sudden.
No, I just copy stuff from Autosport
and
GP Week.
Sacre
and then paste
bleu
it.
Tous les jours.
Yeah, but this kid is, man, he's on his way. On his way to in the pantheon of motor racing.
That's true.
One of the top five drivers.
That's true.
And you know, as a racing fan, this is where it really ticks me off about what happened in 2007. Had he won that championship, he really could have gone another championship with McLaren. Even if there was one with McLaren, he, you know how close he came with Ferrari in Abu Dhabi a couple of years ago. This guy could be sitting on his fifth championship with three different teams.
Yeah, but see, Fernando needs the loving like he gets at Ferrari. And when he was over at the dark side, there was no loving over there. It's a lot of goose-stepping and pointing at people.
No, they said, look, there are two cars. Select what you want and see if you can beat your teammate. And that kind of thing is not for everyone. But he does very well when he has the love of Luca.
And Luca does love him. Could you imagine how much Luca loves this guy?
Oh, absolutely.
My
absolutely.
Gosh. Fernando snaps and fingers and they just line up.
Like the commercial said, he's writing his own check.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep up the good work,
but
Nasser.
You know, talking of check, one thing he did very good, you know.
Nass, we don't talk about checks very much here at F1 Weekly. It's sort of a sore spot.
Okay, proceed with caution.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Anyway, let's go to the Grand Prix in Germany. We have much better weather. People are wearing their short pants or their Lederhosen.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to this race. Fernando on pole, Sebastian Vettel right next to him. You don't know what could happen. And, of course, Pastor Maldonado, third row, you got to watch him. He's erratic. He's crazy. He could just go bonkers. So, a great start for the race. Fernando does an outstanding job and just blasts away. Sebastian Vettel does a good job as well. Great fight between Michael Schumacher and Sebastian Vettel, fighting and dicing it up for second place. Felipe Massa, what happened to Felipe Massa? He lost his front wing because he was starting way in the back, and then he crashed into a Williams or a Lotus. I was never really to get a clear picture of that. Did you? You got that stop-and-go technology here.
No, but I don't do a lot of reminding. Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you, you can expect something like this or Pastor Maldonado doing something on the first lap. And frankly, I was kind of surprised that Maldonado was running okay after lap one.
Exactly.
But, you know, Massa has just got under a bad spell and he needs to say adios to Ferrari team now.
Yeah, I agree. Romain Grosjean, another bad start for him. He loses his front wing, believing that he tagged Bruno Senna. Bruno Senna has a puncture. And then Lewis Hamilton, on the third lap, has a problem. And he has a puncture. His bad luck.
This, Steven, there is a lot of
debris.
No, not debris, but a lot of reliability with cars, unlike the old days. I mean, there's going to be a problem where a team will make a mistake and you will not score many points and a driver will make a mistake. And problem now is we are having up to 20 races. So team can make two mistakes, and you know, being a normal course of season, and the driver can make a mistake or two. So some of these things will happen. Somebody will run into you. So you have to take that into consideration if you're trying to win the Le Championship.
Your diplomacy is just outstanding, Nasser.
Well, you know, it's personally, I like a driver who goes for victory, like Gilles Villeneuve style, you know, gung-ho. But, you know, in this day and age, stakes are so high that you have to bring the championship to the team. That's what they're interested in.
That's very true. So anyway, on the fourth lap, after Lewis Hamilton discovers he has a puncture, he radios the team saying that he has a problem. And my shock, as the team is communicating with Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton says, we should retire the car. I was shocked.
Well, so were the commentators that I was listening to, but you got to understand, when somebody, a racing driver, last thing he wants to do is retire. So they probably, I had an inkling that there was something more than that. I just didn't know what it was.
I think it's psychological. I think he's weak.
Nah.
And just showing something, you know, when he sees Fernando racing at the front, he just can't take it anymore.
Really?
Yes, I'm under that.
Really?
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. Would you like Massa to be replaced by Lewis Hamilton?
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, great fight on lap five for Kimi Raikkonen, Paul DeRista, who's having a pretty good day. Kimi Raikkonen takes eighth place. He's doing a pretty good job. Felipe Massa, after he pits and gets a new nose, fast lap of the race, 122.5. Jean-Éric Vergne, your buddy, pits on lap six. Sergio Perez passes Kamui Kobayashi. And, of course, whenever something like this happens, everybody, if the whole audience stands up and goes, team orders, which is nonsense. They were on completely different strategies. Lap 11, Jenson Button is now closing in on Michael Schumacher, who has some really heavy blistering on one of his front tires. Kimi Raikkonen pits on lap 12 from P9, goes on the softs again, which I was surprised. Fast lap of the race, Fernando Alonso on lap 12 with a 122.214. Lap 13, Mark Webber and Paul DeRista puts in a fast lap. I was very, very impressed with that. Lap 15, Schumacher pits, but the excitement comes on lap 19 where Fernando Alonso pits and Jenson Button pits on the following lap. And I think they were answering for that pit stop, but great pit stops by both teams, and McLaren has some pretty fast pit stops this weekend.
Yeah, pretty impressive. And, you know, talking of Kimi, you mentioned his name a few times, so I bring this up. Have you noticed when he's in a close dice with drivers, very rarely he runs into drivers?
No, he doesn't lose.
Did you notice that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's called professionalism.
Yeah.
No, you could tell the difference between the Maldonados. And Grosjean. Grosjean.
Even Lewis Hamilton, if he's, you know, he's going to, they'll be, let's get physical with.
Yeah, and I just don't understand that. But Kimi, Fernando, Mark Webber, most of these guys, when they're passing each other, you don't see parts of the car flying off. So, no, that's a very good point. And Kimi Raikkonen, not only was he quick, but he was fast. He just needs to qualify better. And the Lotus setup is getting close, and I see a win coming for Kimi.
Me too, and I think if the team tells him, Kimi, we have a revised contract for you. You are released from all public appearances, all media. I think he might find another half a second.
Well, and not only that, but I have a funny feeling he's not doing too much already. That was part of the deal in bringing him back to Formula One.
Oh, of course.
Because he detested that kind of stuff.
That is so beautiful in a sport that is so high profile, so media driven, that here's a guy who doesn't want to talk to anybody.
It is beautiful. Lap 22, the team tells Jenson Button that he's racing to win, and he is really fast and doing a fantastic job this weekend. On lap 25, Felipe Massa pits, and the team tells Kimi Raikkonen he's P4 and you're fast and you have a free Finlandia when you get back to the pits. Motivation.
Oh, yeah.
Lap 27, Paul DeRista passes Kamui Kobayashi for P9. Bruno Senna pits. Lap 30, Fernando Alonso at this stage, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching this race, I think Fernando Alonso should be pitting. He should be jumping the gun, get that second pit stop so he can dominate and keep this win in the bag, because Sebastian Vettel and Jenson Button right now is looking so fast that I am growing concerned. Nico Hülkenberg pits on lap 31. Sergio Perez passes Nico Hülkenberg for P6. And the Saubers look so quick this weekend. Both Kamui and Sergio Perez not only are they quick, but speaking of not hitting each other, they're running a clean race, staying out of Pastor Maldonado's way, Felipe Massa's way, and Bruno Senna's way, because those are the guy those backmarkers that'll mess you up. So Sauber doing a really, really good job, and Sergio Perez, of course, I don't want to say he's auditioning for Felipe Massa's seat, but certainly Ferrari has to take him seriously when you see a race like this develop. You see Sauber, not only Sergio, but Kamui Kobayashi is doing an outstanding job. You have to give it to Peter Sauber. This team is really, for a mid-pack team, they're doing a great job.
Yes, they are. And as far as Sergio Perez is concerned, the way he has performed over the past two seasons, this is not a driver where Ferrari needs to break him in, that he needs to get some experience. He has the experience. And I think him also being Spanish-speaking like Nando, I think there will be a lot of good chemistry. And as long as Nando can convince him that he is numero dos, there'll be harmony in the team.
Oh, I'm sure that the convincing will be done easily by
Luca
and his television sets. But on the other hand, instead of having a seasoned, experienced number two who's languishing P14, who doesn't need to be out there driving just for the sake of driving, Sergio Perez at Ferrari, at least if he was P14, he's getting some experience in the Ferrari with the Ferrari team. I think that would be a much more valuable way of spending that position.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is, they take him as a teammate to Nando, and if he's not able to perform up to his level or even come very close to him, then they know that, you know, this is not what we want for the long haul. But then if he can be the he's from Guadalajara. If he can be the Lewis Hamilton of Guadalajara, then, you know, wow, we got a machismo here. But, you know, Ferrari is an interesting situation. If they have to let go of Massa, they have Sergio Perez, who is in their driver development program, and they also have Jules Bianchi, who obviously is very quick. He has won a lot of championships and races. They have a guy who has 2 years of experience. They can take him, groom him, or they can take somebody who has no experience. So, but they need to make a change. Change is good sometimes.
I agree. And not only that, but Ferrari, I'm sure, can get Sergio Perez for half of what they're paying Felipe Massa.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, he's sponsored by Telmex. He will have no problem taking 1 million pesos and going racing around the world.
Absolutely. Anyway, the next big moment for moi in the German Grand Prix is when Lewis Hamilton, on a great set of tires, is catching up with the leaders. He's in front of Jenson Button, and he's about to unlap himself by passing Sebastian Vettel.
What happened there and this thing happening reminded had shades of Suzuka, Eddie Irvine, and Ayrton Senna.
Correct. And I believe that was Eddie Irvine's, one of his first races.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
That was at the beginning of the beginning for him.
Yeah.
And yes, exactly. Some people weren't too happy about it, but McLaren were ecstatic.
You know, I don't understand this thing about drivers not being happy. Like, at one time when Robbie Gordon was racing in Indy cars or whatever it was, and drivers would complain it's hard to pass him, you know, like they complain about Weber. And I remember him saying a couple of times, hey, you know, if you're faster than me, pass me, don't complain. So I don't know what Sebastian Vettel's agenda was.
Well, his thoughts were that, why is he mixing it up with the leaders who are trying to win a Grand Prix while he's just trying to unlap himself and then has to go around a full lap to catch up with the leaders if he has a chance to win this race, because he doesn't have a chance to win this race. But it was all good. He was doing his job as a teammate to Jenson Button. Certainly, it did cost Sebastian Vettel some time. Lewis Hamilton does pass Lewis Hamilton passes Sebastian Vettel.
No, if this was a situation that Sebastian was just right behind the race leader, then I understand. But hey, you know, if you are not attacking the guy who's leading, and somebody is faster than you, then they will pass you, and they should.
Exactly. Not only that, but I thought Vettel should just let him pass. Because that was the comments from Fernando Alonso after the race, saying, you know what, when I heard Lewis was coming up to unlap himself, I was just let him fly by. Because he's not part of the race that I was in with Vettel and Jenson Button all mixed up. But anyway, it was exciting. Fernando Alonso pits on lap 42. Sebastian Vettel pits exactly at the same time. No advantage until Sebastian Vettel comes out of the pits on lap 42. And Jenson Button is there, beats him, goes ahead, and takes second position. That was an exciting moment.
Yeah.
That was a great moment for McLaren. And Jenson Button, he needed a psychological uplifting.
Yes, absolutely.
So
It's been a while.
Yeah, and because we know he's a good driver, he's had some bad luck. So this was outstanding. Lap 45, the team tells Sebastian Vettel to be smart and don't blow it. Okay, Bouton has passed you. Calm down. Save your tires. There are still plenty of laps. And this is where Vettel still shows a little bit of immaturity and trying to outrace his tires, because right now we know the tires are so important. Lap 50, Romain Grosjean goes into the gravel. He's just having a bad day. Nico Rosberg pits. Lap 56, Fernando Alonso to Jenson Button, 0.06 of a second. And this means to me that Fernando Alonso better speed up, because I was stunned that the McLaren was that quick. I just couldn't believe it, and I thought for sure with only 10 laps to go, Jenson Button would have plenty of time to pass Fernando, but it was not to be. Jenson started slowing up, and this happens to McLarens a lot. And it wasn't talked about too much in the post-race or during the race, but I'm sure they had to wind down because he didn't have enough fuel. Guaranteed, McLaren is always really driving on the edge to be as competitive as possible, and I think he had to wind it back just a little bit to save fuel to make sure he finished that race, but it was very, very exciting. Lap 57, the team tells Jenson Button that there's traffic ahead for Fernando. You might have a chance, but it isn't going to happen. Lap 60, Sebastian Vettel now is closing on Jenson Button because, like I said, Jenson Button has to wind it down. His tires are getting a little wore out. The last big hoopla of the race is when Sebastian Vettel passes Jenson Button, goes wide, and at first I thought it looked legal and machismo. As Mr. Whistle said, they should build walls so these drivers can't use all this runoff.
Yeah, that was as legit a pass as Alex Zanardi's pass on Brian Herta at Laguna Seca crossing the track. You know what? Do you remember the 89 race when Senna and Prost collided at Suzuka?
Yes.
And Senna was able to restart his car and go.
Correct.
You know, and they were at a sort of kink or whatever.
Yes, and they said that he...
Yeah.
He should have been disqualified for cutting...
Well, he was.
Yes.
His crime was that he did not re-enter the track from where he left, which would have meant making a U-turn.
Which meant advantage.
Yeah, so, you know, if they're going to disqualify drivers like this, which really was not a big deal in terms of how small that area was, then, this you know, that Alex Zanardi passed this. I mean, it's into racing folklore now. It was basically illegal. You cannot just cut a track, leave all four wheels, and then rejoin. And so, not that I'm happy he got a penalty, but the race that Lewis Hamilton in Belgium that was taken away from him, when he gave up the position, then he was behind Raikkonen, or he was not behind enough. So there's going to be a rule. It has to be universal and applied same way for everybody.
Well, we've seen some pretty bizarre rules, including my favorite was the Felipe Massa and Fernando Alonso rule.
Qualifying?
Yes, at Renault.
Monza? Oh, that was the biggest show. That was
completely
unbelievable. Yeah.
So the stewards...
But now they have drivers and Arnaige and Danny Sullivan and stuff like that. So there is some sanity in the application of penalties.
Absolutely. I think it's much more fair. But in the end, Fernando Alonso, an outstanding drive. Ferrari did an outstanding job strategy-wise. The pit stops were good. But Fernando Alonso, once again, really outdriving a car that shouldn't be out front winning races.
Well, you know, like I said, as my friend Captain Neal used to say, winning is great in a great car, but winning in a car that has no business winning is magic, and that's what this guy's been delivering. He's the Bill. He should get the Bill Bixby Award for 2012.
I love Bill Bixby.
I'm sure you do.
He was my friend.
Oh,
the good work, Nass. But an outstanding race. I enjoyed every minute of it. Of course, like you said, Sebastian Vettel does get the penalty, a 20-second penalty. And certainly I thought that was a bit harsh as well, because that dropped them to fifth position instead of the third position, which he deserved.
Well, you know, that's what I will disagree with, the penalty. You can't make everybody happy all the time. And they should have just put him in third place, because that's what he deserved.
Yeah. But in the end,
But you know what they say, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate.
Yazabals.
Yes.
But in the end, I was happy because Kimi Raikkonen finished on the podium in third.
Look, this guy does not care unless he's winning.
Oh,
a
I
race.
Know. I mean, he just, I mean, he and doesn't care.
He has said it.
And he does say it. I mean, second place, third place, it's just junk.
You know, some years ago on the last lap, he was passed by Michael Schumacher. I think it was some years ago. And they asked him, he said, I was not for the win, so I don't care.
Yeah, he is a bizarre character. But yeah, there's just no celebration at all for any position other than winning. And you have to respect that.
Yes, and that's the way it should be. But like we've discussed before, championship is very important.
Well, on the other hand, the excitement was Kamui Kobayashi finished fourth.
Best ever for him.
Yeah. And of course, Sergio Perez finished sixth with our friend Vettel sandwiched in between. So great, great ending for Sauber. A fantastic race. Michael Schumacher couldn't put it together. Mark Webber, not a great race for him. Nico Hülkenberg, who started fourth, but it just didn't happen for him. But he was in a points-paying position.
His battle with Kimi was very impressive. I really enjoyed that.
I did enjoy that. And no wings flying off.
Yeah.
It was very impressive. Fernando Alonso now has 154 points. Mark Webber in second with 120, and Sebastian Vettel with 110.
Proud Spaniard in an Italian car to win the German Grand Prix of all these German people here.
Yes, I don't understand about politics too much, but this is true that the situation is not great in Spain, but the Spanish driver, Italian car, designed by a Greece man, is good to win here, but we enjoy the race. I think we were competitive yesterday in wet conditions, and today, starting on pole.
Bravo! Well done!
Today, well starting done. On pole was, I think, the key factor, because it was difficult to overtake, so we were maybe not the fastest, but we keep the position.
Thank you very much. Sebastian. So, I have a difficult question. First of all, your second congratulations are looking, because Jensen, I would say, wasn't very happy the way you passed him. So what do you think about it?
Well, he didn't say anything to me, so he didn't complain to me. So no, it was a difficult one. I wasn't sure whether he's still on the inside or not. And obviously, the last thing you want to do is to make contact. So yeah, because he's in a dead angle. He's side by side, but not really. I can't see him from the inside of the car. So I tried to give enough room and then went wide. And obviously, we're all struggling with our tires. I think Jensen in particular, that's why I was able to get close and pass him.
So congratulations, Jensen. So may come over to you. Congratulations being third. Quick comment on the passes over from Sebastian. Happy about it?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to the crowd. You know, it's amazing to see so many people here in the paddock. But no, I had a great race out there. It's nice to be fighting at the front again. It's been a little while, but I had a great race, and I don't wish to comment at the moment on the maneuver at turn six.
Congratulations.
How do you think this is going to play out? We're halfway through the season. We've got Hungaroring this weekend. Whew, if Fernando could win this weekend, it's going to be a big one.
You know, it's 10 races down, 10 to go, I believe. I think this is going to come down between Nando and Sebastian Vettel.
You believe that?
Yeah, I think so. I think.
You think Vettel's going to be able to put it together?
You know, I tell you, you cannot argue with success, and I certainly won't do that. Youngest world champion, youngest pole winner, blah, blah, blah. Tremendous racing talent. But what I've observed with him is that if he's in the best car he runs, he's gone.
That's true.
But, you know, I have yet to see him pull off, apart from that first win with Minardi.
Toro Rosso,
Moi and Monza in the rain. And rain is the great equalizer, as they say. Apart from that, nothing comes to me. All the wins he has are like pole position gone. Very impressive, very dominating. But I don't see these type of wins. I don't see the Donington win apart from that first win. Let's just put it this way, the Toro Rosso wins. So at least like Kimi Raikkonen, as great of a racing talent he is, I have never really seen him do in the rain what I've seen Nando, Sebastian Vettel, or Hamilton do. So everybody has some strong points, some weak points. But I have a feeling that if Red Bull can give him a car that's uber dominating, then he might do what he did 2 years ago. He might do to Nando what he did to Weber. He has that capacity to do it. But if this is going to be like today, the Red Bull is not too quick, today is good enough for third, then as cagey and good Nando is, I think he might stick it to everybody.
And you know what? I agree with the Nando sticking it to everybody, because I believe that Nando at this stage in his life, in his career, the package, he has actually peaked. And he's at the top of the pinnacle in terms of his driving abilities, his mental focus, how he looks at the race, how he's in control, the way he's so calm when he talks to the team, you know, and always says, "Don't worry, I've got it." It's very, very impressive, and I think he's going to be very hard to beat.
I will say, if he wins this championship, this in the last many, many years has to be one of the most well-deserved world championship. You know, there's a difference between like how Niki Lauda won the championship in 77. You know, second, third, fourth, couple of wins, Jody Scheckter world championship. You know, the consistency, you know, which is all fine and great.
K.K. Rosberg is a good example.
Yeah, and you know, it shows on the record book you are world champion. But to win the way he's doing in a car that he's doing, that is, this is incredible.
I agree. Hungary is a good track for a couple of drivers. Nando is one of them, but Jenson Button is also done very well here, and that's going to be very interesting. With McLaren showing speed and Red Bull being heavily scrutinized this weekend with the engine mapping gate.
Oh, yeah.
Engine mapping, for most of us, it's really the way an engine runs throughout the race and how they control the torque settings, the amount of fuel that goes in at certain RPMs, blah, 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 blah. Not very exciting stuff to talk about.
That was a time when you fill a car with fuel, put on tires, go race, drive like hell.
Yeah.
Now it's just so, you know, techno stuff that, you know. I mean, I don't even want to read about it. I'm not a much of a technical guy anyway. But what's next? You know, what are we going to get into the grooves of the tires and the material made in the Brembo brakes? You know, we don't have the time for all this. We just want pure motor racing, senor.
Well, you know what? And it's funny. Brembo brakes have not come up in a long time.
Well, Brembo, Hitco, and Carbon Industries.
I mean,
where is Peter Windsor?
Yeah, I mean, that used to be a big topic of conversation. And, you know, Rubinho, and even especially at McLaren when in 2007, Nando preferred one set of brakes and Lewis preferred the other set of brakes.
No, you know what set of brakes Lando preferred? The one he wanted Ron to put on Lewis.
Exactly. Love it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial, so we'll be back after this brief message from Honest Engines.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Boss Kaggs drowning in a sea of love. Allmendinger's NASCAR career drowning in a sea of sample B. Greetings and racing regards. Today we have action from Hape Dos, Formula Dos. North of the border we have IndyCar action. South of the border, very south in Brazil, we have WTCC and a new champion in AutoGP. But Mr. Rogers, just for your sake, great German Grand Prix and a great victory by a great driver. So shall we start with a little more Formula One informazione?
Absolutely. I love some of the Motorsports Mondial F1 goodie bags.
Yes, thanks to Autosport Magazine and GPWeek.com, which I would highly recommend, GPWeek.com. It's from Certain Images, and this is not a paid commercial, but it's free. So please enjoy. And, you know, they say good things in life are free, kind of like F1 Weekly. There you go. Okay, so German Grand Prix. I hope you don't mind if I start with Lewis Hamilton. Is that okay?
Not surprised.
Yeah, 100th F1 start for Lewis Hamilton. First race in Australia, and the next eight races saw Ace of Stevenage on the podium. I'm sure you remember those races. First GP win in Canada from pole position, and had it not been for a visit to Pebble Beach in China, Lewis would have become the first rookie world champion. But we thank him for being F1 Weekly's first official cage rattler. You know, the interesting thing is all 100 races for Lewis have been with McLaren, and it was also 100 race with Red Bull for your buddy, Mark Webber.
And I think it was the 50th for Kamui Kobayashi.
You're jumping the gun here, Mr. Rogers.
My apologies to your entire family.
Oh, no worries. This is the entire family here. Okay, Nando and his win, number 30, puts him in the top five among all-time race winners. Very, very impressive. He has now scored points in 22 consecutive races, too shy of Schumacher's all-time record. And Schumi also, of course, has the record for most wins, which all our listeners know. And this is very important. On Saturday in Budapest, and we know what happened there. Budapest, you know, it's the home of rock and roll. On Saturday, Nando will celebrate his 31st birthday with some paella, lots of vodka, and a little bit of devushka. She's looking mighty fine on the F1 Weekly Forum photographs.
She's okay, but she's a little skinny. I was really surprised. Somebody from España usually likes a little more woman.
More meatloaf?
More meatloaf.
Okay.
More in the trunk.
Okay. Button, back in the high life with his first podium in seven races. This was good to see because I want to see more and more drivers fighting for the wins, you know. Raikkonen, also on the podium, in the points for seven straight races. That's pretty good. And you mentioned Kobayashi, 50th F1 start with his career best finish fourth. So he is very good. And talking of Sauber and Kamui, a little Tweety Bird is tweeting me that Sauber may have a new driver next year.
But, I believe that. But I know you're always communicating with the people, the drivers, the managers, the teams. And if anybody knows, it's the Swami.
Well, you know, we'll see. This is pretty reliable source. And it was just like a couple of years ago when I was informed that Hülkenberg has signed with Force India, first year test driver, second year driver, and it came true. So, you know, let's see what happens. Schumacher has now gone 50 races since his last victory in China 2006. And I remember not so long ago, there was a time when he could not go three races without winning. The guy was, you know, but the times have changed. This is interesting. Nico Rosberg finishes higher than he started for the first time this season. Pretty interesting, huh? Sauber, both cars in the top six for the first time since 2009 Spa, when drivers were Robert Kubica and Nick Heidfeld. Do you remember those guys?
Yeah, I miss Robert Kubica. I certainly hope he's doing well in his recovery.
Yeah, I hope so too, but you know, looks like his Formula One career is kaput now.
I'm going to hold on to a little bit of faith, Nasser.
Okay, that's good. Victory in Germany is number 21 for Ferrari, the most by any team at a single event. So I hope they're selling a lot of Ferraris in Deutschland über alles. And Bernie, thanks to Gilbert Grabowski, Mr. E was nowhere to be seen during the German Grand Prix. And this thing still might get... Grabowski is in jail now, but, you know, Mr. E may have some issues.
I think he could pay, just spend some money and get out of it.
Well, we shall see. Something is going to happen. Either they will pounce on him or he will retire from FOM or something will happen. This is getting pretty ugly. Okay, now how about some Jeppe Deutsch, also known as Hape Dos, the support series for F1. They call it the official feeder series of Formula One. Impressive second win of the season for Johnny Cecotto Jr. Now here is a kid 2 years he didn't do much, and this year he's doing very good, so we're happy for him. One of only two drivers who started on slicks. Swiss Fabio Laimer was second, and Stefan Richelmi from Monaco, last man on the podium. Felipe Nasr was fourth, and Paul Sitter Guido van der Garde from Holland was fifth. Sprint race on Sunday. This was won by cage rattler of the season, James Collado of UK. Dutchman van der Garde was second, and Felipe Nasr from Brasilia was third. Felipe is doing a good job in his rookie season. He is managed by Steve Robertson, manager of Kimi Raikkonen. So the future is very bright for this young man. And Collado, you know, who is supported by this British organization, Racing Step Foundation, and they want to help Brits, young Brits. James Collado is really doing what you really need to do in GP2 if you want to get into Formula 1 top team. You know, winning the championship in third, fourth year is not going to cut the mustard. It's just not going to bring you to a top team. Second year, like a comment I made to somebody in driver management, and he was not too thrilled by my comment, which was, if you win GP2 in your second year, then you're just another very good driver. But if Collado can finish in the top three, it's just going to be very, very impressive. He's already won a few races. So we wish him and everybody all the best. Championship leader of the pack is Brazilian Luiz Razia. He is in his third year, and he has 171 points and doing very good this year. And he's hoping to become the first driver from his nation to win the GP2 championship. You know, we've had race-winning Brazilian drivers like Nelson Piquet Jr. Do you remember him?
I do remember him vaguely.
Yeah, and Lucas Di Grassi. Italian Davide Valsecchi is second on 161 points. Nice guy. He's in his fourth year with GP2. And third is Esteban Gutierrez from Monterrey, Mexico, with 129 points. And this is his second year. He will be back home next month, and his home, as I said, is Monterey, and I'm working with this PR man to connect with Esteban via Skype. So that should be a good chat. We haven't chatted with him for a while. Happy Tres, GP3. Good weekend for Connor Daly. This was good for him from Indiana. Got to the podium in both races of the weekend. Patrick Niederhauser was the winner of race 1 over Connor. Mitch Evans was the winner of race 2 over local boy Daniel Abt, with Connor Daly third. Championship is being led by Mitch Evans, who is under the wings of Mark Webber, and he has 121 points. Second is Aro Vainio, who is managed by Nicola Todd, 103 points. And of course, Nicola Todd also manages Maldonado, Massa, and Jules Bianchi. They have a young kid in Charles Leclerc in karting. He's also doing very, very good. Abt is third with 76 points. Connor Daly is fifth on 73 points. I think this championship will be between this guy Evans or Aro Vainio. So let's see what happens. And they're going to be racing this weekend also. From GP3 to F2 at Paul Ricca. You know that place?
No, that's my favorite.
15-year-old Swiss Matteo Tuscher won for the first time in F2 in race 1. You know, I thought he was the German-speaking Swiss, so maybe the name is Tuscher, but then I read today that he's French-speaking, so maybe the name is Touché. Maybe Mr. Interrupter can help us on the correct pronunciation. Okay, so this was his first win in F2. He's doing very good, and he's very young. Now has become the youngest F2 winner. Luciano Bacchetta of UK, who won the first four races of the season, was second, and fellow Brit Daniel McKenzie was third. Marcus Palmer was the winner in race 2 over Tuscher and Christopher Zanella. And Zanella is also from Switzerland. Bacchetta still leads the championship with 189.5 points. Second is Matteo Tuscher on 157. Zanella third on 143 points. They were going to make this F2 as like a big deal series. But so far, you know, people who have won the championship, they have really not been able to move forward. There was this guy from Spain, Andy Suchek. He won the first championship. He's nowhere to be found. Then Mirko Bortolotti won the championship. He's racing German, some, you know, touring cars, stuff series like that. North of the border, we go to Edmonton for the IndyCar race. Elio Castroneves held off Sato San to win for Team Penske. Surprisingly, no caution during the race. And the last time IndyCar race on a road course went caution-free was in 2007. At Portland in the Chem Car race. That would be the Portland International Raceway. I went there once in 1989 for the GTP race. It's a small track, but very nice. I liked it very much, and I like the city also very much. Will Power was third, Graham Rahal was fourth, and local boy Alex Tagliani was fifth and led most laps in his Barracuda-sponsored car. You know, it's very good to see companies like Barracuda, they are based out of this area, you know, becoming major sponsors in motor racing. And Alex Tagliani is the guy who hit Alex Zanardi when he had his huge crash in Germany, just as a reference. The top five in the championship are from five different countries. Ryan Hunter-Reay from Florida, USA, is leading with 362 points. Castro Neves from Brazil, second on 339 points. Will Power from Australia, third with 336 points. Scott Dixon from New Zealand is fourth, 301 points. And James Hinchcliffe, also known as Manica because he replaced Danica in the GoDaddy car, he's from Canada and fifth with 286 points. Indy Lights, maiden win for Colombian racer Carlos Munoz over compadre Sebastian Saavedra. It was an all-Latin American podium with Esteban Guerrieri of Argentina third, who is now leading the championship with 351 points over Saavedra in second with 324 points. And Saavedra will drive for Michael Andretti's IndyCar team in the IndyCar race at Sears Point, Sonoma. Star Mazda, which is one notch below Indy Lights. Victory for another Colombian driver, Camilo Schmidt, in race one, and victory for Brit Jack Hawksworth in race two. And we will have an interview with Jack this weekend on a special Sunday podcast, and doing very well in the series, I must say, in his first year in the U.S. More motorsports from O Canada. American Le Mans Series in action at Mossport Park. Winners were Klaus Graf and Lucas Lohr in an HPD ARX. HPD being Honda Performance Development, Honda's version of Toyota's TRD. Now we go down south to the south of Brazil in Curitiba, home of Ricardo Zonta. Remember our friend Ricardo Zonta?
He was wonderful. And his mamita.
Yeah.
What was it? Rosita?
Rosa, yeah. Rosita Rosa. Yeah, he was very nice and friendly. So they were racing AutoGP and World Touring Cars there. AutoGP is a series that used to be Euro Formula 3000 and now using the first generation A1GP cars. This series is promoted by Enzo Coloni, whose team just got booted out from GP2. You know, I'm trying to find out from one of my sources in the racing world what really happened there. I'm not sure if they can tell me or if it's for public record, but I have some feelers out, so let's see what happens. Both races were won by Antonio Pezzonia, very impressive, also known as Jungle Boy, and gentleman we interviewed recently. Big winner of the weekend was British driver Adrian Quaife-Hobbs, who took the championship at Supernova Team, an outfit run by David Sears, and he used to run A1GP Germany and Pakistan team also, and also ran in GP2 for many years. The AutoGP and WTCC World Touring Cars Championship are coming to Sears Point in Northern California in the near future. As they say in a song, please be there, 99 miles from Palatial Studios. Will you go to this race?
I might.
I would like to go to this race.
World Touring Car Championship?
Yeah, I would like to interview some drivers. And there are, actually, you know, there's this driver from Norway, Paul Warhog. He will be there. And it's coinciding with the time I'll be out of the country, so I'm not sure if I can make it, but it just might be that I might come back the day before. Okay. And Paul was in history book as the winner of the first ever GP3 race. So it'll be nice to, and I've stayed in contact with him through Facebook, so it'll be nice to catch up with some of the old guards, you know. World Touring Car Championship, Chevy 123 in race one. Yvonne Muller winning over Alain Menu and Rob Huff. And Huff went on to win the second race of the weekend over Menu and Gabriel Tarquini. Chevy drivers are also 1-2-3 in the championship. Muller leading with 287 points. Huff second on 270 and Menu third 250 points. And some members of the Lukoil racing team were denied entry into Brazil at the Sao Paulo airport. They have a Seat in the series driven by Alexei Dudukalo. So they fared worse than Mr. Ye and myself at the Luton airport. We were denied access onto the plane.
Wow.
But getting to the destination and getting denied entry is even worse.
Sometimes when I go to Sonoma Raceway, I'm denied access and entry.
That must be at the NASCAR race.
Correct.
Okay, you're not too sophisticated for them.
I know, that's the problem.
Yeah. So in other World Touring Car news, Gabriel Tarquini and Thiago Monteiro will drive for Honda next season. And talking of tin tops, you know this guy, your homeboy, Stefan Rattel. He is no longer going to be the promoter of the FIA GT1 Championship for next season. So he's now planning to launch his own Le Series. Okay, NASCAR. Some bad news on the NASCAR horizon for AJ Allmendinger. His sample B test also came positive and he's now on the sidelines indefinitely. I expect a release from contract coming soon from the law offices of Walter Czarnecki, a fine legal beagle employed by the House of Penske. This is very sad as AJ is a very talented driver, but he's smart enough to accept NASCAR invitation to join their Road to Recovery program, unlike Jeremy Mayfield. But I think Roger Penske also has a Road to Recovery program. It's called giving the ride to somebody else who wants to do the job. I very much hope AJ is able to put all this behind him soon and get back on track where he belongs. Your thoughts on this situation, Senor?
It's a very sad state of affairs, but I knew that the B sample would be positive.
How did you know that?
Because I have an inkling, Nasser. I didn't think it was a mistake. These places are pretty sophisticated, and sure enough, it gave him a little bit of more time to think about what his plans are going to be, because it's over. And I think he's going to accept an invitation to go to the IndyCar Series.
Yeah.
Because he had some good success there as well.
Yeah, it was very good. Looking ahead to motorsports action this weekend, we have the Hungarian Rhapsody in F1 Major, GP2, and GP3 Minor, MotoGP at beautiful Laguna Seca track here in Northern California, F3 action at Spa-Francorchamps, where Felix Sedales from Puerto Rico has already grabbed pole position, so which is very, very impressive. I met this kid at the Alton Park F3 race. Nice kid, and I wish him well. And, you know, surprisingly, he did last year Formula Renault and then jumped into F3 and has been able to carry his weight, and that's very impressive. Anytime you can win a race and be competitive in the top three in your first season, you got something going. And please check out our conversation over the weekend with young English talent Jack Hawksworth on a special Sunday edition of F1 Weekly podcast. And finally, I would like to give a shout out to Jorgen Bouwe Bivonius. Man works hard for the Marcus Ericsson fan club. They organized a road trip by bus to see Marcus in action at the German Grand Prix. Please check out their photos on the Marcus Ericsson fan club Facebook page. And I'm working with him, with Jorgen, to do some sort of a cross-promotion with F1 Weekly. So maybe we can do something for Monza and enjoy some Swedish meatballs in the park. Are you ready for that, Senor?
I'd love it. I know he can FedEx some Swedish meatballs to us, and I will send him some F1 Weekly paraphernalia.
Yeah, and then we can have some picture with some people with the bus in the Monza parking lot. So, folks, that's it for now. Thank you for listening. Sayonara. And Das Vedania from California.
Nasser, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And of course, this means it's time for
Wrap it up. I'll take it.
It's interview time, Nasser. We wrap it up after the interview.
Oh, excuse me, moi.
Yeah, you're just hungry, that's all. There you have it. Let's hear about this young man, Axel Jeffries.
Okay, as you know, I'm interested in motor racing, and motor racing is very international, and I take a keen interest when I see drivers from different parts of the world where you normally don't see. I remember some years ago there was a kid here racing from Peru. Unfortunately, didn't go very far, but it was good to see him. And then we have Monty from Colombia. I was looking at the Formula BMW when it was, like, you know, they're doing a lot of promotion for this series. They had a series in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. And I saw this kid, Axel Jeffries from Zimbabwe. I said, wow, a race car driver from Zimbabwe. And he was doing very well. Then he disappeared from the scene, as always, you know, most of the time because of lack of sponsorship. And this year, him and his peeps have put together a package for Formula 2, where he's racing right now. So I got in touch with him. We did a digital dialogue with him some months ago. So he was kind enough to find some time and do a interview with us. So this is the conversation with Axel Jeffries, originally from Zimbabwe, now living in England and racing in Formula 2. So please enjoy the conversation and also visit his website and Facebook fan page to find out more about this young, exciting talent. Thank you, Axel.
Now, I'm very happy to see you back in action because I remember I was following your career when you were racing in Formula BMW Asia. How is the Formula 2 season going so far for you? Are you happy where you are in terms of performance and speed?
No. I mean, I think I'll only be happy once I start winning. But, you know, as I said to a lot of people, I have to humble myself and to everyone that's behind us that we have a lot to learn. It's a big step up from Formula BMW to Formula 2. You know, I'm happy that I'm racing. I'm extremely happy. So grateful to my sponsors, FAI. But I think only next year we'll really start to make big progress and start finishing on the podium, which is where we want to be.
You mentioned there's a big difference between the two cars. What's it like driving a powerful machine after almost no racing for 2 years? And this is also a turbo-powered machine, right?
Yeah, exactly. I guess it is a massive jump up, but because I was out for 2 years, it was almost I had nothing else to expect. I had lost touch off racing completely. That coming to Formula 2 was just, it was a new start for me. So it wasn't to say that I had bad habits from Formula BMW. But it's been taking a while getting used to the turbo. It's really slow to react. You get on the throttle and you have to wait. It feels like you're waiting forever for it to kick in. But yeah, that's taken a bit of time to get used to and keeping the turbo spinning as well. Another thing, the car is really heavy compared to Formula BMW, so you can't carry as much mid-corner speed. It's a bit like jumping from F3 to GP2. You just got to get out of that habit of, you know, going through the corners with speed. It's more stop, you know, get the car pointed the right way and bang on the power. But, you know, we're getting there.
Now, in the last few weeks, you have raced at places like Spa, Brands Hatch, and Paul Ricard. Near Marseille. Is Zach's a loving life these days?
I definitely am. I'm enjoying it a lot more than I was last year. I'm extremely happy, to be honest.
What's it like going through Eau Rouge in a racing car? You love it?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, it's you make it a lot more difficult for yourself if you're not flat. If you're flat, it's really easy. You get such a good feeling. You feel like the man, but it's really hard to get it round. Especially, I think Spa was only my second round in the year. So I got a post Eau Rouge, and, you know, the first two laps I was off the throttle and it felt all over the place. And you're like, whoa, you know, this is going to be hard flat. But, you know, the third lap, you're like, all right, enough. I'm just going to go flat out. And it just feels so much more planted. But, no, it's a great feeling.
Now, season finale is at my favorite track, Parco Monza, in late September. What will be, when the season is over, what will be satisfactory result for you in the overall championship? And what is it that you're really looking for this year in the racing series?
I think in terms of championship, it'll be hard to place ourselves anywhere because we missed the first five races. So it'll be hard to place ourselves anywhere. But in terms of results for the weekend, my main goal, and I'm sure, you know, that will satisfy myself and the Zimbabwe, would be if we can get a podium before the end of the year. I think that would be a big accomplishment. It's a lot to ask for, but I think if we can achieve that, that would be, you know, the best way to end the year.
You are from Zimbabwe. Are you getting a lot of press and the girls going crazy for you in Zimbabwe?
I am definitely getting a lot of press, a lot of support, loads and loads of support. In terms of girls, I mean, I'm so focused on the job that you don't even realize that's not something that you're focusing on at all. It's you're constantly looking for ways to improve, and I guess that's not really going to help me at the moment. So no to that, but in terms of press and support, we're getting loads of that.
Well, you might want to have a chat with Lewis Hamilton. He can show you how to be focused and have a lot of good time.
I'm sure he can. He's quite experienced with that.
Okay, we're going to go back to racing here. Before you signed up for Formula 2, I understand you were also looking at some possibilities in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about it, please?
Yeah. Initially, our plan beginning of last year was to do Indy Lights. It was mainly because we were approached by a group of people who wanted to work with us. They put in a lot of work for it. Unfortunately, things just didn't work out though. We didn't get the budget for it, so that just didn't go to plan. But we know more with them and gone back to just working with my father and getting a lot better results.
Is racing in the United States still an option for the near future, or you're focused on racing in Europe?
At the moment, my focus is on Europe. It's where my sponsors want me to be. So, and it's, you know, it's a really, really great opportunity, especially in Formula 2. But if the opportunity comes for me to go to America, I definitely wouldn't say no to it.
Great. And talking of sponsors, tell me, how popular is motorsports in Zimbabwe, and do you have any support from Zimbabwean companies right now? And if you can name them, if that is possible.
Yeah, sure. I mean, my main sponsor is AfriHype. They fully support my campaign. I have the ZTA, which is Zimbabwe Tourism Authority. They're also helping us quite a lot. And I'm getting a lot of help from just individual Zimbabweans. Everyone's putting a lot of support into it. It's more of a national goal to see me in Formula One. So I'm getting full support from Zimbabwe. Really grateful for it.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, really grateful for it. In terms of motorsport in Zimbabwe, it's starting to pick up. When I started racing in Sim, it was really, really popular, really big. It was as competitive as South Africa. But unfortunately, the last couple of years, it died down. But I believe they're trying to work on it and trying to build it up again, and hopefully in the next few years, it will improve.
Okay, so we talked about financial support. Okay, what is one thing you would like to see in your country to promote and help young racing talent like yourself?
I think it has to start at the grassroots level. Karting needs to be improved. We need to try and get more young Zimbabweans into karting and help develop them as well. So rather than just letting them go racing, we need to try and, you know, form some sort of racing school just to teach them. I think that would be the first step into getting them to the next level.
Okay. And apart from your own country, you have raced in South Africa, South Asia, and now you are racing in Europe. Was there a season, whether in car racing or karting, where you think you developed the most or learned the most as a racing driver?
Yeah, it was when I turned, I think it was 13, when I was with Toyota and Castro. I was racing in South Africa at the time, and I'd just been signed by Toyota and Castro. It was the first time that I basically went professional in my career. Obviously, Toyota was a massive company that were behind me, so they put a lot of effort into developing me. Went through all the, you know, media, fitness, driver training and that kind of stuff. So that was the one year where I felt I improved the most as a driver and as a professional. It was my best year in karting as well. We won quite a couple of championships in South Africa. We won races in Europe, so I think overall it was one of my best years.
Okay. In 2009, you were third in Formula BMW Asia at the age of 15. What do you remember most from that season?
My best race, which it wasn't the one I won, it was in Indonesia. It was really, really close between myself and Rio Haryanto. Even though I didn't win in Indonesia, I think it was my best performance of the year. Rio was a very experienced driver at the time, and I have a lot of respect for him. And he gave me a good fight, and, you know, we fought really hard in all four races in the weekend. And I think every single lap of ours were almost identical. It was really nice to watch and to be part of. So I think that's definitely a memory that sticks in my mind.
Good. And you are based in England right now. Are you also going to school or totally focused on motor racing?
I'm in college at the moment. I'm doing a BTEC in sports science, but my racing does come first at the moment. I still do put in a lot of effort, though, for my education. I'm nearly finished my qualification, and by next year I'll be looking at universities that I could possibly go to if it doesn't clash with my racing. But I'm, you know, just about to finish my BTEC.
And do you have a special management team that is guiding your career, or is it just you and your dad making the decisions?
We've had management teams before, but I think at this early stage it's been most effective work with my father. We both have each other's best interests at heart, so I think that's at the moment that's the way we're working, and it's working really well.
Now, I understand you picked up your motorsports interest from your dad, and you were watching a lot of videos when you were a kid. What do you remember most when you before you got into racing about motorsports?
As in what made me start racing, or just in general?
In general, like, you know, before you got into racing yourself, what memories do you have of, are there any certain drivers you remember, certain races you remember?
Yeah, they actually, sorry, I've gone blank, I'm trying to think of his name, but I used to follow MotoGP a lot. Used to drive a rider, Repsol Honda, you'll probably know him, Australian.
You mean Casey Stoner?
No, not Casey Stoner.
Oh, there was the Wayne Gardner, Nick Doohan?
Mick Doohan. I used to be a massive fan of Mick Doohan. He was probably the person that got me more involved in motorsport, really strangely, and I loved Mick Doohan. That's probably the biggest memory I have of a particular motorsport driver / rider.
Yeah, no, MotoGP is fantastic. Are you a fan of Doctor also, Rossi?
Yeah, I am. I'm sure everyone is. Everyone loves Rossi. He's a great guy, great sportsman as well.
Yeah, great. No, they're very good that you're following MotoGP, because I love motorcycle racing also. Okay.
Yeah.
Axel, have you, you know, they have all these racing driver school and specialized people who, you know, improve your techniques. Have you ever gone through a racing driver school or something like that, or driver training program?
Not really. I think the only development work I've done was, I still do, is simulator work, as that obviously helps us learn the tracks, and it's just easier to find out some issues you're having in the car without, you know, going and crashing it. Other than that, I haven't really done much outside of, you know, driving the actual car to improve our skills.
Okay, we're having a crazy season is Formula One, which is getting crazier race by race. Who would you like to see win the championship, and your thoughts on Senor Nando?
I have huge respect for Alonso. I think he's one of the best that they ever will be. I think he's highly underrated. He's a driver that you can learn so much from. I think he's going to win the championship this year. I really do. I do support Lewis, but I think this year it's definitely going to be Alonso.
Have you ever met any of the current Formula One drivers?
I've been fortunate enough to meet most of them. Obviously, when I was doing Formula BMW, most of our races were a support Grand Prix to the F1. So we were fortunate to meet nearly all the drivers, I think. I have, yeah.
And who gave you the best, who left the best impression on you?
Definitely Lewis.
Really?
I went and I introduced myself to Lewis, and he spent a good 15, 20 minutes talking to me, you know, acted like we were friends from ages. It was so nice. Probably the nicest driver that I met.
So 15, 20 minutes talking to you means Nicole was not at the race.
Obviously not.
Yeah, okay. Okay, now, this is because I'm a big music fan also. Yeah. I understand Careless Whisper by George Michael is your favorite song. Do you like Cowboys and Angels by him also?
It's a bit embarrassing, I guess, someone my age to be like George Michael. But, I do like his music. It's nice. I mean, I like, obviously, new hip-hop and R&B and that kind of stuff. But I do like to, before races, sit down and listen to a bit of chilled-out music and stuff there.
Cool. When is your next race and where?
It's in Hungary at Hungara Ring. It's on the 7th of September, so in about 5 weeks' time.
Okay, so you have the whole month of August free, just like the F1 boys. So what does a young racing driver like you do when there is no racing going on for a few weeks?
Well, to be honest, this is going to be my most exciting break, I think, in between the season. We're planning on taking the car to Zimbabwe with our sponsors, and we're going to do a roadshow. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think that'll be quite exciting. Other than that, we're always training, keeping fit. While I'm in Zimbabwe, I'll try and see all my friends and family that I haven't seen for a while, and just chill out.
Cool. And have you ever been to the United States just to visit?
I haven't, no. It's one of the few places I haven't been. I'd really like to visit, too.
yeah, you know, you should, when you get a chance, check it out. And there's, you know, quite a bit of motor racing scene here, all sorts of racing, oval racing, drag racing. And yeah, no matter where you go, you will enjoy the trip. I can assure you of that.
I'm sure I will.
Okay, man, it's great chatting with you. I would like you to give a message to listeners of F1 Weekly. We have listeners all over the world. If you have a message for them, please.
Yeah, sure. I'd just like to thank everyone for all the support I've had. Keep me patient until I get off the pace, but I'll get there.
That's a brief message.
Not really sure what else to say.
No, you've delivered the message. Hey, I thank you so much for your time, and let's stay connected. We would like to do another, you know, once the season is over, maybe do a season recap with you and looking forward.
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Nasser.
Yeah, sure.
Appreciate it. We'll be in touch shortly.
Axel, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Anyway, Nash, it's time to wrap it up, and that means 50 words on the German Grand Prix, so I'll go ahead and start. Neon Zapper, is Jenson Button back? What a fantastic pit stop by his team. Kobayashi impressed me too. Vettel lost his smile, and this time Maldonado wasn't even on the radar. Overall, this was a good race with superb helicopter coverage.
Lap traffic, Alonso and Ferrari figured out at last how to make tires last to the end. Maldonado figured out how to drive a whole race without running someone off the road. Jensen found his mojo while Hamilton lost his.
From Yay, three drivers in three different cars could have won right up to the end. Racing at its best. I know many don't like DRS, KERS, and lottery tires, but boy, is it entertaining, and no matter how false you may think it is, the cream is rising.
The cream always rises to the top.
Huh.
Leon Bray, lots of racing for 90 minutes, all the way up and down the field. Fred demonstrates why he is the best, again.
Well, there you have it. Everybody was so busy with their Brockwursts that we didn't get more 50 words on the German Grand Prix, but I'm sure the form will make it up for this weekend's Grand Prix in Hungary. So there you have it, Nass. Any predictions for Hungary before I wrap it up?
Oh, Hungary, they say that passing is very hard, but one of the greatest passes was made in the inaugural Hungarian Grand Prix, Nelson Piquet, of all the people on Ayrton Senna. So I don't know who's going to win, but I think we're going to have a great race, and I don't know what the weather is going to be, but I expect a red car in the podium. They're only running one red car these days, so we don't have to worry about the second driver. Who will win the race, Clark? I don't know. I would say maybe it's time for Sebastian Vettel to win a race again, or maybe Jenson Button come and win a race. Or it could be, you know, Lewis Hamilton, your favorite driver.
What about Kimi? Kimi's pumped up, Nass.
Yeah, Kimi is good. It will be very nice to see a Lotus win, whether it's Kimi or Grosjean. It just will be very good for sport. What about Michael Schumacher?
Very possible. Schumacher, this is a Monaco-esque kind of a track. Obviously, Schumacher had pole, and it was taken away because of his penalty, but still, he was the fastest man at Monaco. So I think the German cars will be suited, in other words, the Silver Arrows, to this track. Very good point, Nass. Keep up the good work.
What do you think about Maldonado if his track is like Monaco?
Well, if it's like Monaco, I suggest that either Sergio Perez either qualify extremely away from Pastor or have a good talking to. They both speak the same language. I mean, these guys should be communicating. But anyway, thank you very much. Let's wrap it up. If anybody's interested in advertising or cross-promoting with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye-bye.